League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 proudly present The Killer Bees.
Definitely a fan of The Killer Bees.
Don't sweat the technique.
Now from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, bringing you the fastest 3 hours in Houston sports radio, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Ooh, what up, H-Town? Hey, how we doing?
He is Blank, I am Branham. It's Boston Rodriguez behind the glass. No Brian today. Brian gets more days off than Palillo used to. So B-Rod's in, Brian's out. He's OT, whatever, vacation, whatever. I don't even know what he's doing. He's not here. He's not working. Another vacation day for Brian. Houston Texans win a football game, though. Enough about Brian. The Houston Texans win a football game. They're now 3-1. They were swarming all over the field. Little C.J. Stroud magic getting the victory. Do you believe in ugly wins, Blankers?
I think you have to. I think I've always believed that, you know, whether you win by one or win by 100, you know, in that league, it's so tough to get wins that when you get one, you just take it any way you can. But that, they almost should have lost that game multiple times. They had plenty of opportunities to blow that game. They're kind of lucky in a lot of ways.
Yeah, I don't believe in ugly wins. I think if you win a game, you win the game, you move on, you hang it on the left, it helps your win-loss record. Like if the Texans were, not saying that they're going to, but if the Texans were to go on and, like, win the Super Bowl, we're not going to look back at week 4 and be like, oh, that was an ugly win there in week 4. Like, we're going to mostly forget it. If they make the playoffs, we're going to mostly forget week 4 because they won. They won the game. And, like, you beat a divisional opponent. Wins are hard to come by in the NFL. I personally don't believe in ugly wins. A win is a win is a win is a win. Now, you can break down and you can be a skeptic on the mistakes that they made, and then what do you feel about the Houston Texans going forward? With some of the mistakes that were made, how confidently do you feel about the Houston Texans going forward? So, like, I don't say ugly wins, but there are things that happened in the game where, again, I'm not too confident about the Houston Texans when I compare them versus the other top teams in the NFL.
No, and nor should you be, because I feel the same way. You know, I came in and I kept my loyalties and I kept saying to myself, hey, look, this team is so good. This roster is so talented. I think to your point too, Jeremy, the other way of looking at it is, you know how I am. When you lose a game like that, when you lose a close game like that, that's when you remember. Because at the end of the year, when it's the difference between a wild card or the division and home field and all the other things that go on with the playoffs, there's at a certain point you look at it and you say, you know what, that's one we should have had. That one got away. So you're right in the standpoint of, as long as you get the win, I get it, you got the win. Mm-hmm. But walking away from that game, I think the best thing you can say is you got the win and you still got one hell of a quarterback. But other than that, there is a ton. I mean, it's the easy one that, you know, you always pointed out like this. You know, the casuals and the people that just watch the game, sure, you can say the penalties. And you can look at the offensive line. There's so much more in that game that needs to be pointed out about why this team has more questions than answers right now in a lot of ways.
And, of course, we might be the only show that doesn't ignore in victory what you wouldn't in defeat. And we'll get to all that. But there's goods. There was goods from yesterday's game. Like, my main takeaway, because, look, I don't feel uber confident about the Houston Texans as an upper echelon team in the AFC. I don't think they're in the Chiefs category. I don't think they're in the Ravens category. I didn't really feel that way at the start of the year, but I feel like the distance is further. And look, the Chiefs haven't looked good, but I think once the playoffs roll around, the Chiefs are going to figure it out, even though they lost Rashee Rice. Now they have the deadline and all that sort of stuff. I feel like the Ravens are 2-2, but I feel like the gap between the Ravens and the Texans is greater today than it was at the start of the season if they're playing each other in the postseason again. So that's kind of where I'm at with the Texans. I feel like the top upper echelon teams in the AFC have separated themselves a little bit more than what I thought at the start of the year with the Texans. That said, I'd rather be 3-1 trying to figure that stuff out versus 0-4 like Jacksonville, where not only are you trying to figure that stuff out, but your season's probably already done. You're probably already toast. So the good news is here, you know, glass half full, is that there's still a lot of season left to be played. I think we all can isolate the Texans' issues and where they need to improve to try to close the gap on the upper echelon teams in the AFC. And they'll face one of those upper echelon teams in the AFC on Sunday. The good news, though, is that not only are you, like, you know, keeping your head afloat and above water, but you're 3-1 and you lead the division. So it's good that you're not playing your best football and you're still a 3-1 football team.
Yeah, the good, you're going to have a looks like right now you're going to have a ticket to the dance. And so that's always encouraging. And as you pointed out, there's so much season left. That's why when we were talking about what happened against the Vikings, I was like, okay, better in week three than just about any time, but especially late in the year, because there's plenty of time to work things out. But then we heard during the week DeMeco say, look, we got it. We got it. We're going to, you know, we're on it. We're going to figure, we figured some things out. We're going to be fine. And then not only did you see the same mistakes happen, but now there's more glaring weaknesses because you know, for all intent and purposes, everybody's saying you should blow this team out. And we knew it was a divisional game. We know Jacksonville had some talent. But the way that they went about their business didn't give anybody any reason to, like, take a deep breath and say they're better off than they were after the Minnesota game, and now we can see it figured out. But you do have time, and you can do things both internally and, if you have to, externally. And, yes, you're getting players back. But at the same time, the biggest the problems that we're talking about, even if it is just the offensive line, is the guys that you were counting on to be your starters are the guys that are starting football games for you. So it's not like you can point a finger at the line and say, well, we're missing a couple guys. We had to shuffle like last year. You're looking at a team going, well, this was supposed to be our first string offensive line, and we still got issues. And that's just one area of the team where there's many question marks.
7557, Brad, I'm not mentioning the Bills with the upper echelon teams in the AFC. I just said the Texans are going to play an upper echelon team on Sunday. That said, the Bills got hammered yesterday by an upper echelon-y team. You notice both of those teams rested their starters with 5 minutes left to play in that game, by the way, even though it's football. I don't want to discredit the win. Like, and I understand that we have a bad taste in our mouths, and we're going to get to some of the mistakes and some of the errors, but I don't want to discredit the win because it's not easy to win in the NFL. It's not easy to win in the division, and I don't want to discredit 3-1. So I want to make sure to give them credit for winning a game and for being 3-1. That's a lot better than most of the league. The other thing that you're feeling really good about today after a victory Monday, and we'll get to the negative stuff in a minute, but the Texans did win a football game. C.J. Stroud's unbelievable.
Oh, man.
C.J. Stroud's a really good football. And yes, the second half, they went punt. Needed a touchdown, got a touchdown, tipped the cap to the defense for keeping them in the game. But Stroud was making chicken salad out of chicken, you know what, that entire game. DeMeco Ryans kind of gave credit to the offensive line earlier today during his Monday press conference. I didn't think the offensive line played that well. They played better, but they didn't play good. They didn't play well. They played below average. But C.J. Stroud somehow was creating. C.J. Stroud somehow went 27 for 40. C.J. Stroud somehow put up 345 yards and two touchdowns, including a game-winning drive. The Texans have the type of quarterback that when you give him the football down by a score for the final possession of the game, doesn't matter the time. We saw what happened last year in Tampa. You feel like C.J. Stroud and his magic is going to find a way to pull it out, and that's a really good thing to have.
It's a special characteristic, and when you look across the league now and you look at a guy like Trevor Lawrence, the guy on the other side, when you say that, hey, all the prognosticators in the world and talent evaluators and pre-draft guys that tell you this is going to be the next coming and this is going to be the next dude, you find out real quick when they get to the bright lights of the NFL who have those special characteristics aside from just arm talent or athleticism or all these things. And he's got it because you mentioned the one at the end of the game, but let's also talk at the end of the first half. Let's talk about when the ball's in his hands with a limited amount of time and he needs to make things happen. He makes things happen. I was talking to a buddy of mine on the way here and talking about how you see things with some of those guys like a Jaden Daniels, and you're still trying to see what kind of touch he has. But CJ's ability to, on the run, to feather a ball over the first layer and drop down in the second layer, to put a ball where only the receiver can get to it, it is so different than most guys that come in with all the accolades. And you see the guys that are obviously some of the best quarterbacks in the league, like a Mahomes, even a Burrow, guys like that. They can do it. Others can't, or they struggle with it. And boy, oh boy, when you look at those two drives alone and just the way he especially without Tank in the lineup, he got Diggs the ball. Nico is his security blanket, but the chemistry they have and the way off script he finds him and Nico finds a way to make it work is special. And that's something that Texans fans really need to be positive about.
I completely agree, but the final series might have had his worst. The final series of the first half might have had his biggest missed throw of the game. That final pass to Nico Collins over the middle, right in front of the goalpost.
Yep.
Like, C.J. Stroud makes that throw 9 out of 10 mm-hmm. times. So it was nice that he orchestrated, and DeMeco didn't have a great final series in the first half either. Get to that later. So Stroud did orchestrate that final drive and put them in a position to score, put them in position to put up six, and C.J. Stroud normally finishes that drive with six because he had Nico Collins open. It was very similar to the first touchdown he threw to Nico. A little further out, needed to be a little bit more, you know, up in the air to allow Nico to go get it, and he just airmailed it.
Yeah,
it was his worst throw of the day, I thought.
Heard Nate Burleson say something about helmet above, and Nico's going to make – it's going to be all love or something. He's going to show you. That was just a little – that was just too high. You know, if anything, he'd want that one back because that one seemed like a pretty easy throw compared to some of the ones that he had to make. But he had a lot of pressure on him all day. His ability to kind of spin out, to know when to spin, know when to step up, yep. know when to slide outside. And then when it looks like you think, oh, he's got to throw this one away. And then he just finds a way to find a pocket where Nico's hanging. And they end up moving the chains and getting key first downs. That is the chemistry between those two and CJ's ability. I think as much as he gets a lot of love and credit for what he's done so far in this league, that's something unless you watch him all the time, you don't realize how good he is at that.
Yeah. I also want to eat crow on Nico Collins. Like I was a little critical of signing Nico Collins to the extension early. I thought you could have waited a year. You know, you had the luxury of a franchise tag. After seeing what some of these top receivers are going for, and I still don't think Nico Collins is in the class of like Justin Jefferson or Ja'Marr Chase. He might put up the numbers. I don't think he's quite in that class, but he's closed the gap where Nick Caserio, he stole Nico Collins.
He did.
He got him a tremendously under market value for the player that Nico Collins is. So when I was critical at the time of the contract. I'll eat crow on that. Nick Caserio was right. He timed up the decision to extend Nico Collins perfectly, and the Texans have a wide receiver one, maybe not the wide receiver one in the league, but a wide receiver one on a tremendously team-friendly contract.
This is very similar to the Yordan deal, only maybe you still had to pay a little bit extra. But by the time this contract is done, if he keeps playing like this, there's no doubt that the Texans got a massive deal because we know the numbers are only going to go up. I saw Davante Adams' contract goes to 35 next year, wherever he's playing. And that's unreal in itself because he's not even close to what he used to be. But you know that you got a bargain with all these numbers going well above $30 million a year. But at the same time, he's a blue-collar one. I was thinking about it yesterday and watching this. He might not be the flashy and the guys that want to get down after, you know, making the big play because they don't want to take a hit.
Yeah.
He's the blue-collar guy, not afraid of a hit, gets extra yards because of it, and he is a blue-collar stud one.
Yeah, he really is. He's really good. And the numbers he put up yesterday, 12 for 151 and a touchdown. Keith called us last week and was like, oh, is this a Dalton Schultz game? And like, Jacksonville likes to play a lot of man-on-man. And if they're going to try to play Nico Collins in man coverage, Nico Collins is going to feast. Nico Collins feasted. 12, 151, and a touchdown. It should have been two. If C.J. Stroud, worst throw he made of the day. In a game where he played really well. Makes a better throw. Nico Collins has two touchdowns yesterday. All right, busy show. It is a Monday, so you know it's busy. 713-780-3776. We will not ignore in victory what we wouldn't in defeat a little bit later. The Astros did play a meaningless baseball series this weekend. We do got to get to the good, bad, and the ugly. Burning Astro questions heading into the postseason, which start tomorrow, and you can listen to right here on ESPN 97.5, and then the Killer Bees immediately after the game will have immediate reaction to the Astros in the postseason wild card series for the first time in franchise history. And we'll get to CJ Stroud in greater detail as well. Game balls, all of it. 713-780-ESPN on Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN975. On YouTube at ESPN Houston, Twitter ESPN975. Blankers at Pac-Man Joel. I'm at Jeremy Branham. We'll get your reaction. Texans over the Jags yesterday. 713-780-3776. It's the Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Guys, a minute for Allstate Siding and Windows. Look, I'm here to tell you from personal experience, there's nobody better in the Houston area if you're looking for windows, siding. When we moved into our new house a little over a year ago, my wife and I were looking at the exterior and also what we could do for the house that could actually give it a little bit extra value and better look and appeal. And the windows were the first thing that caught our eye. And when we changed the windows and went to Allstate Siding and Windows, the process was so easy. And they're so great because they give you a free, no-charge estimate to come out to your house and just as a consultation, tell you what they think you could do to really change your house. And sure, the visuals are one thing and the curb appeal. But the main thing is, especially with the windows and also the siding that they offer, it's the hard exterior protection for your number one investment, your house. It's a shell that guards you through. We know we got hurricane season. We know we've got excruciating heat in the summer. And we have those occasional cold spells when you want to keep the right air on the inside of the house and not have leaks and very expensive kind of issues when you have air getting in and out between the windows. It's fantastic. They come to you, they tell you exactly what they can do for you, and it costs you nothing. They'll point out all their products and other things. All you got to do is call them. 832-204-1936. They come to you to tell you what they can do. 832-204-1936. Check out everything that they have to offer at allstatesidingandwindows.com, but right now 30% off all windows, $2,500 off a complete siding job. That free estimate is huge because they're family-owned and operated. Mary handles everything back at the headquarters. Her brother came out to our house, did our free estimate, explained to us exactly what products would be best for our house and the different price ranges. We couldn't be happier with Allstate. My neighbors actually saw our windows and just had them installed last week. You should be next in line to check it out. Go to allstatesidingandwindows.com or call them 832-204-1936.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5. Coming to you live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Killer Bees
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Maggie, Matt, I was worried about our game plan, but we had some key guys missing yesterday. He put key in capital letters. What do you think he means by that?
Mixon? Tank?
Mixon. Yeah, Mixon. They held him.
And Tank.
They were careful with Mixon. First time I've been careful about a player in the history of the DeMeco Ryans era.
Did you see at the one point when they said Joe Mixon was really fired up right there and really was showing the love to Cam, and he just was spitting seeds and looked like he looks like he was in the library in between classes. He looked like he had no emotion at all.
They were lying. They were lying to the viewer. That was disappointing. Yeah, no Tank. I think Tank would have had a big game against that Jacksonville defense because they were playing man coverage, and then Tank wins man coverage. That's one of his strengths. I think that he would have had a big game, but Nico was fine. Texans won. I'm not going to harp on that anymore. And it does seem like Tank's going to be back this week, according to Will Kunkel. So that's the good news there. 713-780-3776. I thought that Stephon Diggs played well again. Like, he had some numbers. He put up some productive statistics, you know, 5 for 69. The big play obviously was the run play. What really impressed me on that play by Stephon Diggs was that he didn't throw the ball. Mm-hmm. Like, that was a very high football IQ decision. It's like, okay, that's not really there. I think I have a cutback lane where I can score. The Cade Stover block freed it up a little bit more, got into the end zone. I thought it was a great decision by Stephon Diggs.
No, and I was wondering, I don't know if you ever played quarterback, but that's a situation when you played quarterback sometime in your career, and that's where you decide to tuck it and run as more of a running quarterback, and that's exactly what he did. He kind of looked to almost give a head and shoulders fake and realized, hey, my best shot here is to tuck it and run. He did that, and the one thing I give him credit for, it goes back to what you were talking about in the last segment, is the fact that you get a lot of guys that were or are wide receiver ones that basically once they catch the ball, their job is done. They don't want to take a hit, they get down. Since he's been a Texan, at least, and I don't know throughout the majority of his career, but at least since he's been a Texan, he's not afraid to put his head down, drop his shoulders, get in between two tacklers, got the first down with some extra yards at one point during the game on a catch. He's impressive in the way he's not afraid of contact, and he goes right at guys.
I think why people kind of start disliking him is because he's uber competitive, and I think that can rub some people the wrong way. Like, I think he'll voice his opinion. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't think that's wrong. No. I think he'll voice his opinion. I think he's a competitor. He really wants it badly. And at a certain point, whenever that's been going on for a long time, I think it starts to rub some people the wrong way. That's just my guess, and I've only seen him for 4 games, like up close and personal. So maybe I'm putting way too much value in those 4 games. But Diggs had the throwback the previous week too. Remember, he threw it back to Dare.
Yep.
So it's the second time they've had the ball in Diggs' hands to throw the football in as many weeks, and both times been a productive play. Throwback to Dare, I think was it a first down? I think it did go for a first down. If not, it was really close. I think it was a first down. And then yesterday it goes for 6. Yeah. So like, they've been productive whenever they show that. So now, like, teams are going to have to game plan for that a little bit.
I think what you saw, and it goes back to, and sometimes too much is made of what happened, like the post game after Minnesota, how many guys went out of their way to go, you know, talk to Diggs and show him love and do all those things. But I think that we only see what we see when the cameras are on. you know, or if some people share a story here and there. But what we see when the cameras are on is a guy that's very outspoken, that's very vocal, that's very emotional, that can, you know, when we saw what happened in Buffalo, and we know that, you know, according to who you believe in stories, did he wear out his welcome in Minnesota and Buffalo? Things went south after a certain amount of time. That's what we see. That's what we hear. But we don't know. What you see is in the locker room, and what you've seen so far here is what maybe you saw at the end of the Minnesota game.
Well, you don't see the locker room.
No, I said what you see is different than what you see in the locker room. What we don't know is the locker room, the relationships, the fact that you had a coach and two players, two of the better players in Minnesota, go out and reach out to him. You see the fact that there's guys here at the Texans, from Nico to you know, Tank, to all these other guys, and CJ, talking about just how valuable he has been in the locker room, what a great guy he is, how he's encouraging. You see it on the sidelines. Maybe at a certain point that rubs people the wrong way because they think it's more shtick than it is. There's some substance to it. We don't know what we don't know, but it seems like right now he's been everything that the Texans could have hoped for.
I think it's more his fire. I think sometimes fire can rub people the wrong way.
Yeah, maybe. And you know what? There's one thing to say, well, he's selfish because in Buffalo maybe he wanted the ball more, but he wants to win. And if they were struggling like they were struggling and he's not getting the ball more and he knows when he's open, if he's voicing and passionate about the fact, hey, look my way, you know, don't forget the fact this route was there or whatever it was, maybe it's more about the fact that because the team wasn't winning and he wasn't getting the ball, he found something that maybe he was upset was falling on deaf ears for them to be more successful.
They were winning. Minnesota and Buffalo were winning.
No, Buffalo at the start, the middle of the first part of last year.
That's the only time they haven't been winning.
But that's when he was really kind of.
It was more after Brady took over and they won like six of their last seven games.
But there was also. Prior to going into before Brady took over,
they struggled first half of last year.
Yeah, they struggled, and he had outbursts in the playoffs because he was open and felt like Josh was missing.
Made a huge drop. He had that happen too. But Minnesota was winning whenever he left there too. I don't think they got deep into the playoffs with Case.
But my point is more that sometimes it may not just be from selfish reasons, like he wants the yards and the glory and the stats and all those things. He knows when he's open. Yeah, he's got to catch the football. But
right.
Yeah.
I agree with that. I agree. Now, I think we've seen four games with him being at his best behavior. So maybe our viewpoint is different than Minnesota's viewpoint after 5 years, Buffalo's viewpoint after 4 years. But even if it's just that, where he's like constantly, hey, I saw this, I should get the ball here, I should get the ball there, or this is what we should do offensively. I'm going to, you know, talk to our offensive coordinator about what we need to be doing. After 5 and 4 years, that kind of starts taking its toll. Mm-hmm. Like that's something. Like even if that's the bare minimum, doing that consistently for 4 or 5 years will start to take a toll. Especially if you're Josh Allen and you think you're a better football player than Stephon Diggs. Like, who is this guy? I know he's got a lot of, you know, stripes in the NFL and he's got a lot of catches and yards. But I'm Josh Allen. I think I'm the second or third best quarterback in the NFL. How about that guy stops talking to me and telling me what to do? So I think that stuff can, even if it's that bare minimum, which I think it could be. I think it does eventually take its toll on somebody, and it's like, okay, I'm tired.
You wear your welcome out because even if it's coming from the right place, if you're the OC, you don't want to hear, come Steph again. I know he's going to be on my ass. And even if he's right, at a certain point, it starts falling on more deaf ears because of the fact that it's happened. It's like the boy who cried wolf. It happens so much that you're like, oh, man, again? Even if he's right.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, it might not come from a terrible place. And I think that some people, the message that you get from Diggs hits differently. Like, I don't think it bothers Stroud. And maybe it would in 4 years when Stroud's, like, more, you know, established as an NFL quarterback. I don't really get the sense that it would. Or D'Amico. Like, maybe it eventually bothers him. I don't think that it would. Slowick, maybe. I don't know. But, yeah, I've been happy with Diggs through four games. Kalen Bullock, underrated hero in yesterday's game, tracking down Tank Bigsby. If Tank Bigsby gets in the end zone there, the Texans do not win that football game.
That's right.
I firmly believe they don't win that football
double-digit lead.
Two possessions.
Yeah.
Two possessions. Double digits.
And,
yeah.
And that is a scary proposition with the fact that the way the ball game was going, the Texans didn't look like they were dominating on offense. They didn't look like they had the kind of quick score opportunities that were going to allow them the chance to get those two scores, no matter if it was field goals or touchdowns. And that was one hell of a play from a guy that, you know, played. I thought he played fairly well yesterday. I was critical of a lot of the secondary, but I thought that he had his moments as well where I thought he's starting to really progress as a rookie.
Yeah, there was one. The first touchdown they scored, I can't tell if Bullock had a missed coverage there, if they were in man. It could go either way because, I mean, Eric Murray just gives up inside leverage to Brian Thomas like it was nothing. So either Bullock, like, left his zone coverage area, which is possible, and been on the play action, or Eric Murray just got burnt in man-to-man, which is probably more likely, but I'd like to be a fly on the wall when it comes to like watching what went wrong on that play. But that hustle play saved the day, mm-hmm. so credit to Bullock there. Also, I think Derek Stingley, the coverage that he had on Gabe Davis on third down on that series after Bullock made the tackle was incredible. Blanketed Gabe Davis, gave him nothing, and then Foley Fatakasi with the quarterback draw on fourth down saved the day too. So if you're going to give Bullock love, which he deserves, you got to give Stingley and Foley the love too.
Yeah, there were some unsung heroes like the guys you mentioned in that game. And on the other side of the ball, Dare Ogunbowale, without him, I don't think you win that football game. He was, everybody can say he got the touchdown at the end of the game, but that screen pass that he turns into a first down in an improbable situation where there was a couple times where he just kept fighting and got you yards and made big plays. He goes on that list as well because, yeah, Nico should get the love. CJ should get the love and some of the big names, but some of those guys too, without them, you don't win that football game. And that's where, at least from a team perspective, you can say, hey, this is a deeper team than maybe a year ago and you got some guys that can play.
The D'Amico gave Dare a game ball. Gave out two game balls yesterday. It was Nico and Dare. Dare had two third down conversions. The Texans were really good on third downs yesterday, 7 for 13. Dare had two of them. He had a little third and short dump off, and then the play you're talking about was on a 3rd and 18.
Yep.
It was a 3rd and 18 dump off, and Dare turned it into a first down, and then, of course, he had the game-winning touchdown catch. They really like Dare in passing downs, it looks like. Good in pass protection. Not bad running with the football after he catches it. I think Dare is going to get more established in that third down role, even when Mixon comes back.
I agree.
Even when Mixon comes back.
I think that, look, and I think Cam had his moments, and Cam still, with the right, with the right lanes to run through, he's still he's shifty. He's got quick twitch. He can get you yards. But to have the kind of versatility you have with some of your other running backs besides Joe Mixon, no matter what Pierce gives you more opportunities to be successful. Because the one, Dare is supposed to be, good in pass protect, and he's supposed to be a guy that, you can get the little dump offs. But when you look at that first down with the 3rd and 18, mm-hmm. he had three defenders in front of him at about 4.5 yards to get, and he found a way to get that first down. And not many running back, it takes a special kind of twitch to get away from those guys. That was a hell of a play.
Yeah, also, just point your nose down and run through somebody. Make it hard to tackle. But that was nice. I liked Akers running the ball, too. Like, I thought Akers ran the ball pretty good. I still believe, 53 yards yesterday on 13 carries. He averaged mm-hmm. over 4 yards per carry. That's pretty solid.
And you got to have lanes to run through.
I like him more than Pierce.
I do, too.
For this offense.
I said that from the minute that, we saw what he could still do and have left in the tank in the preseason, that I trusted him more than Pierce. I felt like he had more versatility because of his shake and because of his athleticism, quickness-wise, than Pierce. And I know everybody was singing the praises of Pierce. I still think he's your number two, no matter who's healthy and who's not.
To me, when you have everybody back, Mixon's your bell cow-ish. Mm-hmm. Like, he's first and second down. Dare's going to play a healthy amount on third downs. And I think Akers spells Mixon every now and then. Like, best case scenario, if you have the other two guys, Akers is only touching it 3, 4, 5 times a game. But I think he should be the active player, and that Damian Pierce should be the inactive.
Right. And remember when we were talking about all this early on, I said, with the amount of work that Joe Mixon got in week one, at a certain point, maybe once a half, you give him a series off to get a break. I trust Cam Akers in a series to give me some yards as long as the line is blocking, that he can spell Joe Mixon so you don't exhaust Joe Mixon.
If you're going to have three active backs and they're all healthy, and I'm not counting the British Bulldog here because he's your fourth, mm-hmm. for me it'd be Mixon, Dare, and Akers.
Yeah, for sure.
Damian Pierce would be inactive.
No, exactly. I agree with that. And I think that, you got other guys that can do the return game, some of the things that Pierce can do.
You might not.
Well, Sims is a hiccup. Not. But you have Robert Woods. God forbid you need Tank. But you have some other guys so that you don't necessarily have to. I don't know where Pierce, because he's got such a battering ram type running style.
Yeah.
He doesn't have the kind of elusiveness that fits the system like the other three guys.
Even if you concede the fact that Damian Pierce is your best kick returner, are you losing in the kick return game by making him inactive more than you would be gaining potentially in the running game?
No, you gained so much more with the running game than the guys you got.
To me, it's the trade-off that I would make. We thought we might see like Xavier Hutchinson and John Metchie. Not the case. I don't think they trust him. Robert Woods played 54 snaps. Hutchinson played 13. Metchie played 9.
Mechie got a catch at least.
He did. They ran a little screen for him.
It was his first catch of the year.
54 snaps for Robert Woods, who we didn't think was going to make the team. Hutchinson 13 and Mechie 9. I don't think they trust Hutchinson and Mechie in the blocking game.
I would say that's probably accurate. And they probably still have issues, not just in the blocking game, but they have issues with either route running or something else, yep, too, to where they're like, hey, look, we've got proven veterans for a reason. And if I can go to a Robert Woods who made the catches when the ball was thrown his way, who can be a return guy when I need one, but is reliable because I'm not going to rely on him all that much, then that's the guy I got to have.
54 snaps for Woods. Mechie and Hutchinson combined for 22.
Yeah, that's a lot.
That's more than – that's like 2.5 times that Woods played over Hutchinson and Mechie combined. That, to me, is a huge tell. They don't have a whole lot of faith in Hutchinson and Mechie in this offense. Whereas Woods, they can at least trust. He might not have the juice of Hutchinson at this stage of his career. He probably doesn't have the juice of Mechie at this stage of his career. But they can trust Robert Woods to be in the right spot where he needs to be, where Stroud's expecting him to be, and they can trust him blocking. So that to me was a pretty big testament that Hutchinson and Mechie are kind of buried on this depth chart more than we thought. 713-780-ESPN, HRP listener line, 713-780-3776. Let's get to the do not ignore in victory what you wouldn't in defeat. What went wrong in yesterday's win? It is the Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5. Coming to you live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Killer Bees
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Do not ignore in victory what you wouldn't in defeat. 713-780-3776. Ocho, sorry I'm late. I was watching the handful of times Trevor Lawrence missed a wide-open Brian Thomas Jr. after he torched both Stingley and Lassiter. Brian Thomas Jr. is good.
He's really good.
He's really good.
I mean, I knew we were going to hear from. I said to Jeremy during the break, we will hear from Ocho today. I just knew it because that's his guy, and boy, did he look good yesterday. And if he had frustration and he showed emotion, I don't blame him because he is a weapon, and he got missed more than a couple of times. That could have been the difference in the ball game.
I still don't know how Ocho was expecting the Texans to get Brian Thomas Jr. I guess he didn't want him to trade down and just stick where they were picking and then draft them late first round? Because he went 23, which was the Texans' pick, actually. So maybe that's what he wanted. Because you had the trade down. Texans traded down from 23 to, what was it, 44 or 42. They drafted Lassiter. They got a second-round pick next year, Minnesota's second-round pick, and then, of course, traded that second-round pick for Stephon Diggs. So, I mean, you wouldn't have Lassiter, though. Like, you wouldn't have Lassiter and Diggs, and you would have Brian Thomas Jr. I don't think I'd make that trade, even if I know what I do now. I think I'd rather have Lassiter and Diggs than Thomas Jr. Now, I might rather have Lassiter in the second rounder.
Yeah, but who's starting a corner opposite of Stingley? Yeah. If you go and you stick where you are, you're in big trouble because the guys you brought in obviously shown you that they can't play dead.
Yeah, I think I think what would be up for debate there is Diggs or the second rounder next year. But I'm okay with the trade down. I'm okay trading 22 or 24 for 42 in a future second. So even though I like Thomas, I'm okay with that trade that Nick Caserio made. I'm not playing revisionist history on that one. 6517, fringe receivers and running backs on the roster are not the issue with this team right now. No one said that they were. I'm assuming he means the offensive line. He also says this team is just painful to watch. Penalties, no running game, and CJ running for his life like Shedeur Sanders. Okay, that's what he meant. I think we both probably had penalties, offensive line in some order, very top on our list of do not ignore in victory what you wouldn't in defeat. 12 penalties for 93 yards. Two Monday Night Football games tonight, so the week's not completely over. But as of now, the Texans are the most penalized team in the NFL.
Yeah, that's not a good look. And when we were talking about this a couple of weeks ago, we're like, well, you and I had the bet because it was how quickly did they get it fixed? Not only did they not get it fixed, but it seems to be getting worse. And then you hear during the week, we've got it. We're working it out. We've already addressed it. Okay, well, you addressed it, but you obviously didn't solve the problem because it continues to happen. And it continues to happen with multiple guys. And the line itself is a bigger problem than we thought it was going to be. Kenyon Green's pass defense, as good as he might have looked early in the season, Kenyon Green's pass defense is horrible. And he gets completely outmatched and then has no choice but to tackle the guy that's going by him and blowing his doors off. Veterans that you thought weren't Shaq Mason's, not a guy that's supposed to get penalized multiple times and get beat. And the tackles continue to be a problem. You're paying the two guys on the outside the most money to do the best protection they can for C.J. Stroud, and they are getting abused too. And the entire offensive line is in disarray.
Yeah, it's the penalties are a major issue. The illegal man downfield, they happen, what, three times?
Yeah.
That's kind of 50-50 on Stroud a little bit too, because those are RPOs and et cetera. Like, it's kind of like they expect the ball to be out quicker. There's also a time whenever, like, it didn't look like an RPO to me, and you had Kenyon Green and Shaq Mason kind of just like lollygagging 10 yards down the field, like they were running the route. So that has to get cleaned up. All the penalties have to get cleaned up. A couple of the holdings, and this was a crew that threw their flags a lot, but you have to adjust. You're not going to blame the officials. Like, you have to adjust. You're the most penalized team in the NFL. Because you're the most penalized team in the NFL, you have a target on your back now from these officials, because they know you have a reputation of being a team that commits a lot of penalties. Some of the holdings weren't necessary. Like the one on Tunsil where Stroud already cleared him.
Yep.
Stroud already cleared him. Just give him a shove in the chest. Give him a shove in the chest. There was the one time where Tunsil had him engaged inside, so I can understand a little bit where he's coming from. But the moment that he moves off of your shoulder and like outside of your shoulder, you have to let go, because if you're like this, it's an easy call for the official. It looks like you're tugging.
And you know what? For as bad as the announcers have been, that we've been gifted with, the fact that the one guy, I don't know if it was Tiki or was it, which one of the
McCourty?
Twins? McCourty.
I think it was Jason.
Pointed
McCourty.
Out the red gloves. But you're right. It's easier for an official if you're wearing red gloves on a white jersey and you see a blatant grab or a lock of the shoulder pads and a tug. And on some of those, when they ran the replay, they could have called multiple guys for the same penalty. There were guys grabbing shoulder pads and yanking the V-neck or the jersey of a player. And they just, not only were they not necessary, but the other thing with the line that we haven't even got to with all the things that we've already gotten to is their run blocking was horrible.
Yeah.
For the most part, when Cam was getting yards, it was because he was shifting on the run and changing directions and going completely opposite of where the play was drawn up to go just to find an opening to try and squeeze out a couple extra yards.
Yeah, I thought Kenyon had his worst game. The penalties were not great. There was a few of them, and I'll post these later because I watched the condensed game today. I'll watch the All 22 later at Jeremy Branham. He was getting bull rushed into Bolivian. Mm-hmm. He was getting bull rushed into C.J. Stroud's pocket. Like, somebody just texted saying that Stroud had more time to throw. I don't think so.
Nope.
Maybe because last week was really, really bad, but this week was maybe just really bad instead of really, really bad. But Kenyon Green, I thought, played poorly. I saw some people calling for his job, too, saying maybe Kendrick Green needs a look.
Well, at a certain point, you're going to have to make a tough decision instead of the business decision of the guy you drafted getting every chance. He started out looking okay to start the season, but that's got – when we start talking about the fact this has to be addressed for the greater good of the entire team going forward, there might be some tough decisions that have to be made, because he looks overmatched. And at the same time, when you need your running game, and I think to the texter's point, I think because he didn't get sacked as much, it's easy to say he wasn't under as much pressure. When you go back, because I watched the entire game again this morning, when you go back and look at it for a second time and realize, we talk about his elusiveness for a reason, his intelligence, when to step up, when to slide, when to roll. But all three of those things are directly correlated to the fact that he does not feel comfortable sitting in the pocket right now, and he's feeling the pressure almost immediately.
He was creating.
Like, yeah,
he was creating. Like, the reason he got sacked less was because he was creating more, which kudos to him. I mean, that was a great job. Blake Fisher, he was not good either. Blake Fisher was bad. So, like, all of the people that last week were saying, oh, no, bench Laramie Tunsil, hold him accountable. That's not a good idea. Not a good idea. Because the understudy of Laramie Tunsil is far worse than Laramie Tunsil. Blake Fisher, look, first NFL regular season game in, like, I believe. I don't know if he's played any snaps yet. Maybe he played one or two or something. I don't think he has, though. He was atrocious. Mm-hmm. He was bad. Like, he was a turnstile. Here you go. Go hit my quarterback's blind side. Fisher was not good. Was the worst offensive lineman for those that played a significant amount of snaps.
Yeah, you would hope that the game plan was he was drafted for a reason as a work in progress, to take this year as just a learning experience to get ready to replace Howard at the end of the year. If you don't want to continue to play Howard and you've got a guy that's a lot cheaper that supposedly is going to be as good or better than him to play right tackle next year. But yeah, he did. When I say that Kenyon Green looked overmatched, but you know, you've got two guys on that offensive line that look like they're just absolutely getting bull rushed and thrown around. That's not a recipe for success, no matter who you're playing. And yeah, you weren't playing the Vikings defense, but the Jacksonville Jaguars, maybe they didn't sack him as much, but they were constantly all over CJ Stroud.
Yeah, and when you had both of those guys next to each other, I mean, that's your left side of your line. That's protecting Stroud's blind side. So that was problematic. But credit to Laremy Tunsil. Like, we give him a lot of grief, and yes, he had the penalties, didn't play a perfect game, got some boos. Laremy Tunsil came back into the game after leaving the game with an ankle injury that I think was significant enough that they took x-rays on it because he walked back up to the tunnel. He also played through a knee injury last year that required off-season surgery. So, hey, I'll give Laremy Tunsil credit where credit's due. I think Laremy Tunsil might be a gamer. And it might be because you took care of him twice and you gave him a contract twice and you made him the highest paid left tackle in the NFL twice. But for a guy that's playing on what needs to be a surgically repaired knee in the offseason, for a guy to leave the game with an ankle injury and then come back and finish the game, I got to tip my cap to that. That's the signs of a gamer.
I'll give him an E for effort. I'll still give him about a C for what he did on the field. But the fact that at least he was tough enough. Because, right, when he went out, especially because he already had a penalty or two, and then he went out, and when they showed him on the sideline, I'm like, he's done. He ain't coming back. He that looks like a guy that's defeated, that he ain't coming back. The fact that he did, and they needed him to because of what we were seeing with his replacement, credit to him for that, and to tough it out, to do what he needs to do, because he knows, hey, it's a hell of a lot better to be 3-1 with issues to keep working out on the offensive line than it would be if CJ was on his rear end and you were licking your wounds and 2-2.
He also didn't commit an illegal formation, and he didn't commit a false start. I don't think he had a false start. He had two holdings, but I don't think he had a false start. I know he didn't have an illegal formation.
No.
So kudos to Laremy. That's a golf clap for Laremy Tunsil. He said he was going to take accountability, and he didn't have an illegal formation, didn't have a false start. He only had the other two penalties.
Did Green have a false start? Shaq had one, I think.
I think Shaq had one.
Okay, I didn't know if Kenyon did or not.
They didn't. I mean, the offensive line didn't have the pre-snap penalties.
No.
They had one false start. I believe that's it. I think it was Shaq. And then you had illegal formations, and you had a bunch of illegal man downfields. I think there were three. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then you had three or four holdings. So still way too many, but at least it was post-snap.
Well, now we know.
At least it was after the snap. One at a time, guys. We fixed the pre-snap stuff mostly. Now we got to fix the post-snap stuff. You can't ask them to do all at once. Come on.
Now we know it was addressed. During the week in practice, they addressed it's in order of importance. So it was addressed before the snap. Now they'll address what's going on during the snap.
That's right.
And then I don't know if it's unsportsmanlike penalties or whatever that they have to address after the snap.
That Sims one, by the way, was ridiculous. They called Sims for an unsportsmanlike conduct late in the game.
When he just gave him a little shoulder, chicken wing.
That was the stupidest, softest, unsportsmanlike penalty I've ever seen. Should he have done it? Probably not. Is there a way more egregious than stuff than that that happens every single play? Not every game. Every single play. That was a ridiculous flag. Ridiculous.
Yeah, but I think because it was right, the official was right there. And
the
it wasn't,
shoulder tap.
But he did extend out. So it was like, it's real easy to see. But yeah, at that point in the game too, especially because that was starting, I think it was the last drive for them, right?
I don't know. It might have been the second to last.
I thought it was the game-winning drive that they
it
started.
Might have been.
And it was like, okay, you already muffed a fumble. Don't even put yourself in that position. But at the same time, the official was like right there at the right place at the right time.
Second
to
last one.
Okay.
Yeah, because they started that drive at the 14. They started the game-winning drive at their own 31. So, yeah, ridiculous. All right, 713-780-3776. What are you not ignoring in victory, what you wouldn't in defeat? We got to get to Sims. And then also, more game management mistakes from D'Amico Ryans. It's the Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Guys, a minute right now for Doc Linville. Doc Linville, best in the business at getting your hair back. If you've been experiencing hair loss, thinning hair, don't think there's anything you can do about it. You've seen all the gimmicks and the ads and the late-night TV that says all these different things that mask the problem so that you can do the complete cover-up. How about solving it once and for all with your own hair? Because Doc Linville had a consultation with me. He came to me at one of the parties we were having here and said, hey, if you got a few minutes one day, I want to sit down with you. I want to explain what we do. And I said, sure. And I sat down with him. And there were so many things that I took away that I didn't know. Like, I never knew you don't lose the hair on the sides and the back of your head, no matter how bald you go in other areas. And the fact that he can repurpose that hair and put it where you need it most, like your hairline in front or that bald spot up on top and back. was kind of interesting to me, and I wanted to hear more. I did the full consultation. I heard about the fact that, you know, that 95 to 98% of the hair that he's going to move when he does the neograft procedure, taking the hair from the sides and the back, putting it where you need it, 95 to 99% of those follicles, they're never going anywhere. They're going to be with you for the rest of your life. They're going to be the same color, grow the same direction, and be thicker and stronger than the hair that you used to have up there. That was interesting to me, and that was a game changer. And then on top of that, with the PRP treatment, that is like fertilizing your lawn, and the fact that it can really do a big world of difference in hair that's there, but just not with the kind of thickness it used to be, I was hooked. I did it. I couldn't be happier that I did it. The results are phenomenal. Immediately, you see the follicles there. 6 to 9 months later, you see the full results. And believe me, it is a game-changing experience where you are going to love the way your hair looks. Check them out today. Tell them I sent you by, because you get that free consultation like I got. Everybody off the street pays $150. You listen to us. You want to talk to him. Just go to 975hair.com and make the appointment. They'll make sure that they take care of the rest. You go and talk to them. They'll explain the procedures, ask questions, get answers. Just consider it. Nothing out of pocket, no money out of pocket or signing on the dotted line or commitments to make. Just an information session that might be a game changer for you too. Check them out. Tell them I sent you by. Go to 975hair.com.
ESPN 97.5. You're back with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Alex says the Branham Bruiser of the Week goes to Hewitt on special teams. Okay, I'm good with that. Rocky on YouTube, we don't look better. We can't even run the ball. The offensive line is worth half our cap, and they're terrible. Absolutely dog bad word. Yeah, I mean, you're not wrong. you're not wrong. Something's got to change there. Are the Texans, like we talk about all the time, we've talked about it every single Monday. We've talked about it all week throughout the NFL season. The Texans' offensive line is holding back the Texans' offense. If the Texans' offense is going to be really, really good, the Texans' offensive line has to improve.
Yeah, the direct correlation, aside from the quarterback, of everything that you want to do offensively is relied upon with your offensive line. We talked about the fact that you want, and everybody keeps saying, with mixing out or not, you want your running game to be effective. Well, you have no running game if they're not blocking. They're not creating the holes. If CJ's constantly running for his life or sliding out of the pocket, that means the play is probably going off script quicker than it's supposed to be going. And you have to worry again about the offensive line. Then it's the penalties. Then it's the, you know, both pre-snap and the holdings and downfield. And you realize that the crux of everything starts with the offensive line. But it wasn't the only position group where there's some things that need to be addressed too. But that was the glaring need because it affects so many different things.
Yeah, it is an issue, and it does need to get better. There were some moments that were a little better, but still not good overall. Steven Sims, during the game yesterday, I wanted him cut. I slept on it. You think I still want him cut?
I do too.
I think I still want him cut. I don't think his value on this team is worth it now. You look at, well, how are they going to use that roster spot? Like, Xavier Hutchinson's not playing much. John Mechie's been inactive, and whenever he was active, he doesn't even, you know, gets 8 snaps. Tank Dell is coming back. You can't muff punts in the NFL. You cannot muff punts in the NFL.
You can't, and there was like 5 of them in the NFL yesterday.
Yeah, it's weird.
And that was kind of bizarre. But on top of that, we just talked about that penalty that maybe shouldn't have been called at the same time. Don't do that. Don't take that chance that late in the game, down 3 points, and be smarter than that, because you've already made one key mistake that is directly on you and was correlated to 7 points. And you just, you know, you cut a guy in Skronik that was a guy that was a special teams guy, and maybe he wasn't a return type guy, but you made the team over him. It was a tight call. You made this squad. And if you aren't adding value and you're actually being more of a liability, then you gotta either step up or you're going to be replaced.
Yeah, just cut them. Have somebody else return kicks and find the best offensive lineman you can.
Not named
just
Tank
to
Dell.
Bring them in. No, I don't want Tank Dell back there. Just let Robert Woods do
no
it.
No doubt.
Like, just let Robert Woods make sure that he catches the ball and allows your offense to have a possession. I don't need a guy to like have the potential to run back a kick once a year. Just catch the football. Let your offense get on the field, which bothers me. Like, special team, the Texans put way too much weight in the special teams. It's like, oh, you know, we can fight for the extra 5 yards. How about the fact that you take, like, no one really noticed this because they were celebrating the fact that the Texans won and CJ Stroud was magical. The Texans were up 24-20 with 18 seconds left, And they kicked a returnable kick.
Mm-hmm.
Why aren't you kicking it out of the back of the end zone?
Right.
Like, that is a touchdown opportunity. Because why? Because you might hold them to 2 yards, closer to the goal line than the touchback spot. You might be able to waste 3 to 4 seconds. That's not a win. That's not enough of a reward for the risk of allowing a touchdown opportunity. That was dumb.
Yeah, the announcers were all over it. McCourty, I think, was the guy that said that, too, where he was like, so are you going to kick it and try to hope for 4 or 5 seconds, or are you just going to play smart and realize that even from the 30 with 18 seconds or less, or whatever, 11 seconds or less, you're not going to win this football game?
What was that?
And they took a risk that you didn't have to take. And when you look at the odds and everything in the league, sure, that there's only been one return since the new rule was in place. But you don't live dangerously in a game in which you had to live dangerously all game and you were trailing late. Just don't take any more chances and wrap it up.
Kick it out of the end zone. Kick it out of the back of the end zone. That was foolish to me. And then D'Amico Ryan's game management, I think, took another hit. First half, they wasted 16 seconds by not calling a timeout in a big game late in the first half, and then they had to kick a field goal like on second down. You had the first and 20, screen to Nico, big gain. You get to field goal range. He was tackled with 47 seconds left. You do not take a timeout, and you snap the next play at 31 seconds. So you wasted 16 seconds. You're already in field goal range. So this isn't a situation where, like, oh, no, we're going to give Jacksonville the football back. Oh, no, Jacksonville's going to get the ball back in good field position. Oh, no, we're going to have to punt. You got to field goal range on the Nico Collins screen, and you wasted 16 seconds when you had three timeouts. You had three timeouts. Next play, pass to Diggs for the first down. You take a timeout with 27 seconds. You throw away the next play. You know, got flushed out of the pocket. C.J. Stroud throws it away. 19 seconds. Big gain to the 12-yard line for Schultz. Takes a timeout, the second timeout with 10 seconds. And then you had the C.J. Aaron throw to Nico Collins. 5 seconds. And now you have to kick a field goal going into the half. And you carried a timeout over into the half. Not taking a timeout after that screen to Nico cost you 16 seconds, and it cost you at least one, maybe two more chances at the end zone. Failure. That's game management failure. That's clock management failure by D'Amico Ryans.
Yeah, I was screaming at the TV at the time, and you got too cute. You just got too cute and too ahead of yourself. Because if you're going to do that, then you need to make some quick hits or try a running play or do something in the middle of the field where you're going to use the extra timeout. But the fact that time is money in this case, but money would have given you a chance to cash in one more time in the end zone. And the fact that you wasted that much time was like, I was going to call Doc Linville again because I was pulling out more hair going, what are you doing?
Yeah.
Because it was the ideal time to take it. And even the announcers were questioning it going, why are you not taking one here?
16 seconds. You wasted 16 seconds and you carried a timeout with you into the locker room. You would have had two more chances at the end zone. Two more, because that CJ pass to Nico Collins that he missed was first down. You kicked a field goal on second down. You would have had two more chances at the end zone, but clock management. And most people just ignore it. It blows my mind.
That was a Culley move. That was a David Culley move made by a guy that you don't expect to make Culley moves.
So weird. 713-780-3776. Let's go out to the HRMP listener line. Travis, you're in the Hive of the Bees. What's up?
Yeah, it's obvious that just like pro rookies, the sophomore slump is happening for D'Amico. Yeah, there's lots of errors they were making. Questions. Well, obviously we're not going to win the Super Bowl this year. So what do you think about offering Kansas City either Mechie Hutchinson or one of the other receivers? I mean, get a second or third round pick for Mechie. That's what we got him for. And if he does good, 800 yards for Kansas City, maybe jump that up to a second. Something like that. I don't know. What do you think?
Appreciate the call, Travis. Like the creative thinking, we know Kansas City is more than likely going to be in need of a receiver. You're not getting a third-round pick for John Mechie or Hutchinson or even Robert Woods, I don't think. Robert Woods would have value, but as a veteran, they're not paying that kind of value for him either. But, yeah, I don't think the Texans are in any position right now to say that the season's still so much in front of them. They're not mailing in anything or getting rid of one of the deepest position groups they have on the squad either. So I don't think they're looking to try and help a team in the AFC. They're just trying to handle their own business.
Yeah, I don't think the Texans would have the idea of we're not Super Bowl contenders. Like, it might be a realistic point of view, but there's no way that Nick Caserio is going to think that way or D'Amico is going to think that way. And to think that John Mechie could have 800 yards in a season. John Mechie's had 165 yards in his career.
He's not playing here. You think he's suddenly going to be a star there? Or
now,
contribute?
They do have some receiving issues now because of Rashee Rice's injury, but They still have Xavier Worthy, who's they like a lot, drafted him in the first round. Justin Watson's been there forever. They brought back Juju Smith-Schuster. Sky Moore has had more productive years in the NFL than John Mechie. Mecole Hardman's had more productive years in the NFL than John Mechie. I think Kansas City might kick the tires on some receivers. I don't think it'll be the Texans, and I think we're probably putting John Mechie and Xavier Hutchinson on a pedestal. All right, 713-780-ESPN, HRP listener line. Let's get to the good, bad, and the ugly from the Astros weekend. What's the good? What's the bad? What is the ugly? It is the B. On ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. What is the good is this Saturday and Sunday, Oktoberfest is back at the Kima Boardwalk. Get your fixin' of German beer, of German food, live music, cornhole tournament, stein holding competition, a costume contest, and much, much more. It's going to be a fantastic time. It is this Saturday, this Sunday. It's free for you to attend, to walk around. You can already order beer tickets, beer steins, food tickets. You can order online right now, KimaBoardwalk.com, or you can just pick them up day of the event. No big deal. Tons of beer to choose from. Shiner Oktoberfest, New Belgium Atomic Pumpkin, a Blue Moon Belgian White, Yingling Oktoberfest, and much, much more. You can go ahead and get your souvenir steins right now at KimaBoardwalk.com. Also, the food is fantastic out there at Oktoberfest. So seasoned, so flavorful, so good. Schnitzel on a stick. Love some schnitzel. It'll be there at Oktoberfest. German beer bratwurst. You gotta love that. Sausage on a stick. German potato salad. Soft pretzel with the beer cheese. It is so good. It all gets started this Saturday. Live music from 1 till 10. Stein holding competition. Cornhole tournament at night. And then Sunday, October 6th, we're doing it all over again. Live music noon till 9, stein holding competition at 5, cornhole at 5:30. Go right now to KimaBoardwalk.com. You can see the full schedule of events. You can see who's all playing at the concert lineup as well. That's KimaBoardwalk.com.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.